Welcome to the Fozcast, everybody. You loved the episode that we did a couple of weeks ago with the left-back lunatic himself, Paul Robinson. So he is back once again. We put a post out on Instagram a couple of days ago, basically garnering your questions. We want you to ask us the questions that have been burning in the back of your minds, and we will therefore go ahead and answer them. We'll talk about them. We'll try and shed a little bit of light on what goes on behind the scenes at a football club.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Robbo, how are we, my mate?
All good, thank you.
You're looking sprightly for a Monday morning, mate. Tomasi, how are you, pal?
Wonderful, mate.
We good to go?
We are good to go.
Right, hit us off with the first question that you lot have been sending.
Right, okay. First question is from Liam McKee. If you could do your career all over again, would you do anything differently? Robbo, we'll start with you.
Oh, that's a really good question to start the morning off.
Yeah. Diving in the deep end.
Yes. No, I wouldn't, because I thought my pathway was right for me growing up as a kid. Obviously, the mentors that I had put me in good stead for the future in where I ended up. But yeah, I think, no, I'm happy with what happened in my career, yeah.
Really and, good. And who were your mentors?
So I had Graham Taylor and Kenny Jackett was my youth team manager growing up as a kid. Obviously John McDermott as well a little bit now, Luther Blissett. Tom Wally. So they were the people I was growing up around as a young lad.
That's grounded, that is Watford, a great start to a football career, having them kind of guys about,
yeah,
isn't it?
So for me, yeah, it was the perfect upbringing for me.
Oh, mate, I love that.
What about you, Ben?
Yeah, I always used to say that I'd never regret anything, or I've never sort of wish it any differently. But I think looking back now, I think if I could have been the same in my 20s as what I was in my 30s, I think I would have had a much better career. I'd a much happier career as well. I think I only really became kind of like happy in myself as a person in my 30s, if that makes sense. You know, a bit more confident, a bit more just comfortable in my own skin, really. And I think if I'd have had that at the early part of my career, especially in the 20s, I think I'd have really enjoyed it a lot more, and I'd have just been so much more confident to sort of go, no, I'm doing this, and I trust myself and believe in myself.
Do you think that was because your route into football was a bit different? You didn't really have, talk about mentors. Yeah. You didn't have that because you went straight to Stoke at what, 16, 17?
18. Yeah.
And then off you go.
Yeah. I didn't know the...
You don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. I didn't know the basics of being a footballer. I didn't have that foundation, that bringing
that
up.
Grounding in
that football world to understand how it went. So I had to learn it all by myself. And it took years, literally years and years and years. You could talk about anything, the way that you're living at home, your lifestyle, your professionalism, what's expected of you. And I didn't know any of that. So I think if I would have had a better, like, mentors around me to show me the way, then I would have probably enjoyed the younger part of my career a lot more. So it's a fantastic question to start there. Maybe a bit deeper than what you expected.
No, that's the
truth.
They're great answers, they are. Okay, boys, next question is from Dabo76. How would the other lads in the changing room react to Marcus Rashford and the scenario that he was at a nightclub in Belfast, didn't turn up for training, and now it's a disciplinary issue at Man United?
Oh, mate, this is... What would you do?
I think you pull him to the side and ask him quietly, is everything all right?
Yeah.
Because it's starting to happen quite a bit now, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there's obviously a few issues going off the field that maybe the players don't know about.
Yeah.
And you want to get to the bottom of it, because we've never seen a Marcus Rashford do these sort of things, have we?
No.
And
it seems
starting to now build up
with
what's going on. So, I find it interesting that, knowing as well in your contracts that 72 hours now you're not allowed to be seen in alcoholic premises, and now you're in a nightclub but in Ireland.
Is this him wanting out? Is this a sign?
I think he has to take full accountability of it, first and foremost. I think there's a lot of people have said, you know, Ten Hag has to take it. I disagree. I really disagree. I think as a senior first team player, somebody that's an England international, I think you have to take full accountability of it. But I think, again, I agree with Robbo, though. I think somebody needs to put an arm around it. And I think somebody, a senior role model, a senior
player. Who might
player.
That be at Man United, Ben?
Who could it be at Man United? Maybe a Martinez, Lissandro Martinez, well, yeah, like, but Martinez, I worry about his English. But Johnny Evans, maybe.
You've got leaders there, haven't you? Yeah. You've got Casemiro, obviously.
Casemiro, Varane.
Like, they've been there, they've done it.
Yeah.
They've won everything possible. So people like that should be helping him if he has got a problem or if he's struggling to understand like the Man United culture of the pressure.
Dare I say though, Robbo, isn't this where someone like a David De Gea might fit that bill of a leader, someone that's been there for, I know he's Spanish, but he was there for 10 plus years.
Yeah,
or
I think you need somebody who would understand the, but even then you say that you understand the United way and the way you need to carry yourself as a Man United player, but this is just the basics. Genuinely, this is the basics, isn't it? Like Robert said there, it's written into our contracts now that 72 hours prior to a match, you are not allowed to be in a pub, basically, a nightclub, something like that. So to be in Ireland on a Wednesday, Thursday night, and being in a random nightclub, it's so obvious that you don't do that. That's why I'm genuinely, as soon as I saw it, I thought, surely not. Like, does he think he's going to be able to waltz into that nightclub and out of it unscathed, unpictured, unvideoed? Like, it's not going to happen. I don't care how discreet you are with it, whether you come in the back door or not. You are still going to get pictures. Yeah. Somebody is going to see you. So, yeah, it's a weird one. But the players, with regards to how the players will react, they would have obviously heard this news coming out and every one of them amongst themselves would have been like, oh, what is Marcus doing?
I think it's a very interesting point that you made, Robbo, about what are you doing? Because I think the automatic instinct might be to say someone needs to give them a bollocking. But what we've seen recently in the last year in the press with people like Dele Alli, and I guess the revelations there is your point of someone might need to say, is everything okay?
Yeah, well, you're hoping that he's got them people around him to help him with that, but he's obviously not, because he's got people who are actually prepared to take him to Ireland and get on that plane with him. So has he got them right people around him as well? It's like we talked about Jesse. Jesse's been in the same situation now where he's just got rid of his agents. So now for him, it's a fresh start. Marcus, is he the same type of character now? Where does he need a fresh start and to find out the right people that are actually not helping him in his career and putting him in these positions that he doesn't need to be in?
Yeah,
it's tough. Yeah. But there's a lot of pressure at Man United. You know what comes when you play for Man United? Expectation and the pressure that comes with that is what's expected there, and that's not doing these things. We don't see it from the Man City players. We don't see it from the Liverpool players because you've got managers like Klopp and you've got managers like Pep Guardiola go, hold on a minute, no, you don't do this. Like, this is what we do at Man City and we'll deal with this behind the scenes, but like that's the end of it and you're not going to do this ever again, or otherwise they're gone. We've seen it with players. They've gone. They've got rid of them because they're not wanting them around the football club. And you feel sorry for Ten Hag at this moment in time because it seems like problem after problem is happening for him as a manager. And he's the one who's getting the brunt of it, but he's actually the manager. Like, what more do you want him to do? We want Ten Hag's in that role to help the club move forward, and that's producing performances and getting results like they did yesterday. When you're going to go to a place like Newport and you know what's expected and you know it's going to be a tough game, and they get the result 4-2 in the end, and that's what his job is. That's what he's getting paid to do, is to take Man United forward. But these little moments are just not helping.
Oh,
are
it's
they?
Hard work. It's really hard. Hard work. Mm. I think that what will happen with Rashford is he will get a big fine. It will be a 2 weeks wage fine. I think I would assume automatically.
What's that going to be? Half
probably be more.
Yeah, it will be at least a 2 weeks wage fine, and then. Then that's when the accountability has to come into it, though. So he's got to expect a bit of a bollocking. He has to expect a bollocking. And then also he has to expect that somebody's going to say to him, you might not be in the team for a few weeks. Or if you are fit, then we can sort of look to start integrating you. But this can't happen again. It can't happen again. And this is where the accountability has to come into it. He's a grown man now. He's 24 years old, I think
he's 25, 26. 20, yeah, 20. Yeah.
So it gets to the point now where you have to say, as if that's you that's done it, and Marcus Rashford has to look at himself and go, I need to change what I'm doing now because this isn't working for me.
Yeah, Fozzie, when you look at Marcus Rashford, he's obviously been there as a kid and he's had a couple of periods where it's been difficult for him on the pitch. Mm. A little bit like Harry Kane, where it's like new start. Do you think Marcus Rashford's at that point now where you go, is it time for a new challenge?
Yeah, I think probably. I think, again, we've said this in a podcast a few weeks ago. I think Man United is the toughest football club to play for. I really do. I think there is more pressure attached playing for a Manchester United than any other club in the world. I don't care who it is, Man City, Liverpool, Bayern, Real. But I think there's more pressure on those Manchester United players. And I just think it's got to a point, especially with somebody like Marcus, where a fresh start, a move somewhere else will do him the world of good, would really do him the world of good.
But that fresh start as well has got to be right for him as a footballer.
Well. Yeah,
because we don't want to see him now, because of the talent that he's got, we don't want to see that wasted by him just going to a team where he's just going to like fade away a little bit.
Go through the
motions. You want to see him, the Marcus Rashford of the old, where he's going there and he's scoring goals, he's assisting goals. Yeah. But at this moment, like you say, he stayed through there too long. Maybe.
Robbo, what would that look like to you? Because in my mind, I'm thinking,
does he want a new challenge
different
abroad?
Country, yeah.
Yeah, like abroad just to get away, like in Italy or a Germany.
Yeah.
Like maybe like a Germany for him, like Harry Kane's done at Bayern, where he's gone there and you look at him, but they're totally, obviously we've mentioned Harry Kane, but they're totally different characters.
Yeah,
he's a family man.
Yeah.
He's very well level-headed. He does what he does and he says what it says on the tin. But with Marcus, he's got that, maybe that little bit of baggage that's around him that he doesn't need. So, okay, well, let's just go abroad and just let's just get away from Manchester for a little bit and go and enjoy my football again.
That's the thing that I would worry about, is I don't think Marcus Rashford has necessarily got the bravery to go and do that. To go and play in a foreign country like a Harry Kane did, it takes a lot of bravery, doesn't it?
It does, to be able
to trust yourself and back yourself and go, no, I'm going to do this. But I worry that Marcus probably isn't at that stage in his life yet where he's able to say, no, I'm going to go and do this because it's going to be good for me.
Where would be a good move? What country do you think?
It could be any of the big boys, really.
It could be a Barca, or it could be anybody in the world. He could play for anybody
It's as simple as that, because a firing Marcus Rashford who I think that we all agree that Marcus Rashford probably has still more to come.
He's not hit his peak yet, like you say, he's 25, 26, he's still got more to come.
He's an attractive option for somebody. But it's just whether Marcus would be open to doing that. Where he is at this moment, even though there's all that pressure attached to it, it's all he knows. It's what he's used to, and it's comfortable doing that. So it'll be interesting to see. But I think I speak for everyone when I say I think we'd like to see Marcus Rashford back to on fire, happy with a smile on his face.
Ah, he's top
player. The life's at peace and ease with him, really.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, next question then is from Will Kingston. If you could go back to the Blues, Birmingham now, as a manager, who would be your first purchase?
Oh, mate.
Might need a second or two to think about that.
Birmingham City, who would be your first purchase? It's never as easy as what's going to be your first purchase, because you need to know kind of the state of the club, the financial status. We were actually, funnily enough, talking about someone like Jesse Lingard a few minutes ago, weren't we, before the podcast started. Jesse Lingard at this moment in time, still without a football club. And we were saying something like, a move to a championship team, somebody that needs a bit of a sort of...
get him over the line.
Just resurrect his career a little bit.
Something like that,
I think would be a fantastic sign. I think, you know, it takes a little bit of humble pie eating from Jesse's part, but if he's willing to show that he's going to be giving it a go for 6 months and go, no, listen, I just want to get back to playing football. I don't care about the money. Don't even pay me. It's not a problem. Just give me 6 months of playing first team football and I'll show you all what I can do. Something like that. It can be a springboard for the rest of your career, can't it, Robert? Yeah.
No, definitely. I totally agree with it. Like you say, someone like Jesse now just needs that second chance to be given the opportunity to go and prove his worth. So he's a free transfer.
Yeah, been at Blues before.
He knows the fans will take to him. And again, just get himself up and running again, enjoying his football.
Yeah.
And you were there with him, weren't you? At Blues?
I played with him at Blues. And like you say, when he came on loan from Man United, outstanding talent. And you could see that he was going to go on and have a great career. He's on his debut, scored 4 goals. He scored 4 goals against Sheffield Wednesday.
Rob, when a new manager comes into a football club, Rob, what is the first sort of position he would look to try and improve or strengthen to sort of make his stamp on that football team? What would a new manager automatically go for?
I think it depends on what type of manager you are and what type of player, that certain player that you're looking for that can connect the team a little bit better. I think you go in first and you just assess the squad.
Uh-huh.
So you give the squad the benefit of the doubt and you go, right, come on then, lads, let's see for a couple of games. In the background, you can have a list of players that you know that you could add to the squad to make them better. So say, for instance, if you're that ball-playing midfield player that you're looking for that can then connect the dots to the team of playing forward early or controlling the game from the back. So, that sitting midfield player that's good on the ball, or do you need a big centre-half that's got that presence, like that leader through the spine of your team? So, I think you always look as a manager of where you can pick the right position for the team that's going to just help them gradually go on. As the manager then, when you're building that, you then add in more players to the squad to make them better.
Is that then why, you know, you get certain managers when they go, he'll always have players that follow him? or yes. he'll bring us a player.
Because it's trust, isn't it?
Is that what it is? Yeah, is that what it comes down
trust,
to?
Yeah, trust and also the quality of the player that you're bringing is, you know then that, right, I'm going to go for that player that I had there because I know as well, you also know the contract.
Yeah.
So you not you might know that there's a buyout clause.
Yeah.
But it'd also be, I've trusted that player and I can rely on him on a daily basis and a weekly basis in the game. So yeah, I'm going to try and sign him.
Yeah, love that.
Right, okay, next question from Ethan Lem1, Leamington boy. How would other clubs know when a player is for sale? So how do clubs know when a player is for sale? So I'll kind of put a little bit of context into my thought process here. So in the world of football, journalists can often be seen as bad, as can agents. This is a time where journalists and agents can be a friend of the club or the player.
A friend of each other.
Is that fair to say, Ben?
Without that, a friend of each other. This is it. So we're filming in January, towards the end of January, actually. So the transfer window will be closing soon. There will still be dozens and dozens and dozens of players who are hoping to get a move. But it's not just hoping to get a move to any club that will have me. They will have it narrowed down to one or two clubs, right? One or two clubs. Yeah. That player wants that move. The agent wants that move because he gets paid for it. The club want the move, the buying club whatsoever. So this is the part where the agent has to kind of sneakily go around and talk to the journalists and talk to the clubs and make it known that the player wants this move, but he can't come out and say that. He has to work on his behalf for him. This is where you will get agents ringing journalists or news outlets and publications and saying, just letting you know, heads up, that there might be a deal possibly happening between X club and Y player, and just to mark your card so that they might put a little transfer column in the paper or on Sky Sports News or something like that. That's just kind of how it works. This is like Fabrizio Romano, for example, yeah? Fabrizio Romano is the world's most connected man apparently, but he is, that's exactly what he is, because he will literally be talking to players, to agents, to news outlets, to journalists, and they will be giving him information, and it's proper information as well, because he very rarely misses, doesn't he?
No, that's it. And here's a question for you then, Robbo. So on following that line of inquiry almost, so let's say that the deal isn't happening, is this where then an agent or a leak from the club might say, oh, by the way, he's unhappy, or he was out in this nightclub, or is this where kind of naughty stories start appearing to engineer a move?
I wouldn't say sometimes they're naughty, but that would also be depending on the player with his attitude and what he wants to do to sort of get that move. I mean, he could, like they say, turn up late for training, start doing his own thing, start causing problems around the training ground, like games as well. They just not play into the ability that everyone knows that they can play to. So yeah, I think it's also down to the player with their attitude in how much they want to force the move themselves as well. But yeah, like Ben's talking about there, the media, they twist it all. The agents will have their says behind the scenes as well with how you can engineer the move. But also the player's going to play a big part in that, and of how much can I push that move through. To get out.
I've seen players sort of proper down tools. You'll have seen it as well. Players proper down tool, because you'll get to that sort of real crunch time where you know there's only a day or two left of the transfer window, and they really want this move. It's like they've set their heart on it now, and they will just basically go to the manager, the chief exec, the owner of the football club sometimes, and say, "I am not going to be playing for you ever again. So sell me. I won't play for you." And the club at this point, honestly, if everything was transparent, no player would ever do that. No player would ever do it, because he would be scared of being outed by the club. But if I ran a football club, I would want it to be open and transparent and everybody knew what was going on. So if a player came to me and said, "I will never play for you again," I'll go, "That's fine. Are you sure you want to say that and you want to stick by that? Because I will tell the media that. I am going to tell the media that. And all our fans will hear that. And then the wider world of football will hear that. And not only will your fans hate you, but other clubs that are looking to sign you will think twice about signing him if he's willing to do something like this."
Of course, some owner you'd make, Ben.
I know.
Yeah. I like it.
Imagine that, if you could work in a football environment where everything is open and honest and clear and transparent.
Yeah, and you would, like you say, everything would be done amicably, wouldn't it? Between the players, the clubs. And if you just said, "Look, I'd really like this move to go through," and you have them professional conversations behind the scenes, then as a manager, as a club, you're then finding that replacement.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work as easy as that, unfortunately.
I think the other thing is as well is sometimes, rightly or wrongly, it can be a last option for players as well, because you'll have both seen it and you hear stories of good lads in the changing room, and this kind of scenario happens, and the agent or the manager will be pushing them, like commercial manager or agent, family, saying, you're going to have to do it. It's the only way you're going to get out.
Yeah.
And have you seen that when good lads almost take a stand because they've got no other option?
They've got no other option because you see so many players around you who might be a bit more sort of bad exit almost. You see them getting the moves because you see the ways that they go about doing it and you think, is that how what I've got to do? Is that what I've got to resort to get a move? But not only that as well, though, you've got to think about this. This works on the other side, the other way around as well, because I think you always hear about the player kicking off and saying, I want to move and I want to get out of my contract. But it comes from the club side as well.
Of course it does.
The amount of times that clubs say, we don't want you anymore, or we want to sell you.
Go and train with the 21s.
Go and train with the 21s. You don't hear the clubs coming out and saying, we've done that to this player. They keep that very hush-hush. And that goes on more than a lot of people will know, doesn't it, Robert?
Yeah, and then that's when you want the deal done, just for both parties. You just want it to be done and put an end to the saga, and then come on in. The player can move on. He can go and enjoy his football, and we haven't got that type of player now around the football club. So, yeah, sometimes I see treatment and I just think, why do you need to be like that? Yeah. Both parties.
Yeah.
Just come to a great agreement. You both can move on and then it's done.
Yeah. A lot of it is money. A lot of it is contract. If a player's got a contract for X amount of years on X amount of money and he wants to sit on it and he's happy with it and he knows he's not going to get it at another club, he'll just chill.
but that also works both ways,
exactly,
doesn't it?
I remember
we had Henry Lansbury in and saying when he was at Villa and he said he got told, pre-season, go and train with the kids. Yeah. And he said he came in every day and smiled, got on with his job. Every day.
He had a good contract. And that's the type of lad he is as well.
He's like, I'm going to be professional. Yeah. I'm going to keep doing my job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Next question from S. Massey 12. Do any young players come into the first team squad and need taking down a peg or two? Is this something that's kind of commonplace now where the youngsters come in and they need bringing down to earth a little bit?
I think they do, but there's a different type of way of doing it now. I mean, when I grew up, it was and you were cleaning the boots, and if you made a mark on the boot while you were cleaning it with boot polish, and that you get told about it or you get filled in for it. So that's all changed now. That is just the way the games move forward.
Why don't young players do those duties as much as they do, Robbo? So the cleaning of the boots, I think, is such a kind of humbling and good thing.
Yeah, it's a rite of passage.
Yeah, why isn't that
because
so much
it's just
a thing?
All changed now with the rulings. They've changed it all.
It's like safeguarding. It's like
safeguarding and the protection of the boys and that growing up now. But for me, it's life skills. It's how, like you say, I had a relationship with my senior pro because I was doing his boots, so I had a responsibility. So now that bond between me and the first team player, it grew and grew because he understood my character. I understood what he was like as a guy and a person, and we had that real good bond and good relationship. So then when I was in the first team and I went into that team, I then knew. I settled into the group better because I already had that relationship with that player growing up.
He integrated me
because he knew I was his boot boy. And it was the same with all the other kids that had the other jobs with the other players, the senior players.
Would they match?
You'd match your personalities up. And your characters. So it was good how Graham done it. So I was with Andy Hessentyler. So that's who I was with. So I used to clean his boots. But I knew if I did something wrong, I was getting a punishment.
Yeah, damn right as well.
And that was the way it was.
But you made sure then that you would take pride in doing his boots properly because you knew that, like I say, he would take you under his wing and look after you. But also, as a boot boy, you used to get like little bonuses at Christmas or the end of the season or something like that, didn't you? You knew at Christmas... Christmas Eve, it could be a couple of days before or whatever, you were just waiting, especially as a youth team player, aren't you? You're waiting for that player to come up and give you some money. Like, you don't want to go and ask, you don't, but you want that player to come up to you, don't you? I had a boot boy at West Brom, actually, and this was like going way back kind of thing. And it was the last game of the season, and we were on the bus on the Friday or the Saturday, whenever the last game is. And so the day before the game, and you're supposed to give your boot boy a little bit of money sort of thing or whatever, right? This kid had so much about him, right? He was a goalkeeper, actually. He was a good lad, though. But he had so much about him, and he wanted that bonus because all his mates had gotten the bonus off all the other players and stuff. It just completely slipped my mind. I remember being on the back of the bus. I was sat there with Boaz Myhill, right? And this kid, this young goalie kid, right? He had just got into his mum and dad's car to go home because the season had finished, right? Yep. He got out of his mum and dad's car, walked onto the bus all the way to the back of it and went, have I got my end of season bonus? And honestly, I was like, oh, this is incredible. This is incredible. The balls you have to be able to do this is phenomenal, by the way. It is absolutely phenomenal. And it made me laugh so much. Boaz was crying his eyes out with laughter. And I was like, mate, listen, just the sheer fact, the gutsness that you've shown to come here and get this money off me. There you go, mate. I gave it him, but he was buzzing his trip.
What did you give him?
Wow. I thought he would have been, I don't know, 100 quid or 200 quid or something like that. But he was buzzing for it. Do you know what I mean? He literally got out of his mum and dad's car. He was sat in the car with his mum and dad. Yeah. And he came and got the bonus because he wanted it.
Sloppy from you not remembering.
It was sloppy from me, to be fair. It was sloppy from me.
So on another point there, Ben, as well, what you were making about the lad coming up to you on the coach. Remember as well is that you never sat down as a kid. When you was in the squad on an away trip, you had to make everyone's teas and coffees.
Without doubt.
So that was your duty. Yeah. It's like every time you sat down, someone would go, oh, Robbo, I'll have a coffee while you're making them.
Yeah.
So you'd go, and then you'd forget about the staff. So you knew then if the staff wanted a cup of tea or coffee, you'd have to go and ask them to make sure.
What players would do as well, though, they would wait for him to make a cup of tea. And he'd take it over to him and he'd hand it down and he would go to sit down. And as soon as you went to sit down, another player would go, oh, Robbo, can I just... And that would it. Then you would have to go again. And it would just be probably the whole journey. But not only that as well, you would get to the wherever you've gone, and you know you've got all the gear underneath, you've got the beds and all that kind of stuff. You'd have to go and help take that off onto the hotel and stuff like that. Like that don't happen anymore. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like we would have like at Watford, Westbrook, we would have a load of senior players, and we would have to make the young lads do that. We would say, lads, help the staff, would you? Come on, like you're 18 years old, you're traveling with the first team. Show a bit of respect, would you? You've got senior physios, 40, 50 year old physios and masseurs and stuff like that. Go and help them take the stuff into the hotel. You're 18 years old, but. Because they don't have to do that sort of stuff anymore. They don't even think about doing it.
Have you ever seen someone get like a real dressing down, like a youngster kind of getting a real dressing down in the changing room from a senior pro or a manager?
Yeah, I've seen a few of them. Most of the time it's just for like being loud, really. It'll be sort of a bit too, just a bit too comfortable, too quickly.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? So like we've had a few occasions where young lads would be in the first team dressing room on a Friday or like a Saturday or something like that, and they'll be on their phones and they're laughing around and joking and stuff like that. And you've got to read the situation or the moment that you're in and just think, no, come on.
You've got to be on your toes in that environment.
Be on your toes. Could you imagine, as a kid, Robbo, when mobile phones, if they were about at that time, could you imagine going into that first team dressing room at 18 years old and like laughing around and being loud and being on your phone and stuff?
Well, you wouldn't. You'd get fined.
The senior players would fine you straight away.
If they saw you on your phone, you'd get the old finger from across the dressing room and go, get out here now. That's a fine. You're on your phone.
Yeah.
That's what they'd do. But now you see it, the players, literally, as soon as the game's finished, straight on the phone.
Straight on.
I always remember you telling me, Ben, I don't know how old he was at the time, but when Sir Alex Ferguson gave Chris Eagles a dressing down about what he was wearing at training at Man United. Yeah. Tell us about that, because I'm not sure we've...
There were a few. I remember like Chris Eagles used to wear like an Alice band, didn't he, in his hair.
Which is so normal. Nowadays it's so normal.
But I remember like we were just about to go for a walk for like before a match. So if it's the Saturday afternoon.
The pre-match walk.
Yeah, the pre-match walk in the morning. And Eagles has come down in a pair of flip-flops and his Alice band. He's got like the rest of the tracksuit on, but he's got his flip-flops on and an Alice band. But do you know what? This is the sort of stuff that you remember and you look back at, and it made me then never, ever wear a pair of flip-flops for the walk.
Or an Alice band.
Yeah, or definitely not an Alice band anyway. But all the players are down into the reception. You've got to think, this is Man United in the pomp, all the big boys and stuff. And we've gone down into reception. And I remember watching him get off the elevator, and he walked towards us and he's got his flip-flops on and his Alice band. And I'm thinking, oh no, you're going to get absolutely battered here. Somebody is going to say something. Yeah. And honestly, Alex Ferguson must have just saw it and gone, like the rage, the anger, straight away, straight over. What the? What are you? Take that. And honestly, Eagles just went bright red. Oh my God. Turn around straight away into the lift, upstairs, shoes on, no Alice band. But I saw that and I just thought, oh my God, like for one, how could you be so sloppy to come down like that anyway? But two, it just reinforced the fact that never, ever, ever do anything like that. Never come down looking sloppy. You know what I mean? You're representing a football club at that moment in time. I don't care who it is or what team you play for. You are representing your football team. And Alex Ferguson was massive on that anyway. But the fact that he thought he could just go walking around outside in a pair of flip-flops, Massive problem.
Next one, the mental menagerie. Do players notice the advertising boards, the flashing lights around the stadium, around the pitch while you're playing?
Not really.
No?
No, it's something you don't really pay attention to. You just focus on the game, really, when you're playing. That's where your mind is. Your mind's just right, I need to be in the game, I need to focus. I'm not going to stand there and look at an advertising board and thinking, oh, that reminds me of something.
Ben, in goal?
But it must be off-putting, though.
No. Never.
I must be off-putting, because you do, when you watch the telly, I've seen it, there was like a dog one, advertising. And I thought there was a dog running along, but it was the advertising board. So
this
I can see, it's a great point, because you do, because when you watch it on telly, you're going, how are the players not seeing that to what I'm seeing?
I left this bit out on the question, because I wasn't sure. So the full question was, do players notice the ad boards, the flashing lights, and the running dash hounds?
That's what it is. On the telly. But I'm looking in, and I'm going, who's let the dog in? And there's the advertising board.
So this brings me on to a deeper question then, Robert, okay? Because I think there's a big difference between goalkeepers and outfield players. Full stop. There's a big separation. So I want to know what goes through your mind actually in the game, in that moment, in the heat of the battle. Are you thinking, do you have time to think enough where you think, don't make a mistake, make sure you first touch it? Do you think any kind of negative thoughts like that? Or is the game so fast-paced and you're so constantly on the move that you just don't have chance or time to think about the ramifications of making a mistake?
Not really, no. I think you're that fully focused on just being quick thinking all the time of like, where am I if the ball's coming to me? Where am I if the ball's on the other side of the pitch? A lot of positioning wise, I can't let my teammates down, so I've got to move across quickly. So you're constantly thinking of that. That's what you're constantly thinking of, is like your positioning in and out.
That's a nice place to be.
If you make a mistake, that's just the speed of the game and the way it happens quickly.
Yeah.
But you're not thinking, oh, I'm going to make a mistake now, the boys come my way. You just don't think like that.
Oh, that is such a nice place to be, honestly.
But it's different for a goalkeeper, isn't it? Because there'd be like moments in the game where you're not even involved.
Yeah.
So you could just be standing there going, 6 minutes. This is just so easy. Like, I'm so bored. I'm not even. And then you'd be like, oh, God, I'm in a game.
I promise you, there's no goalkeeper out there, unless you play for a Man City or a Liverpool, where you know you're probably not going to see the ball. And even if you do let one in, you're probably going to go and win anyway. But I'd say for 98% of other goalkeepers, when it's a lull or a quiet time, that is the time where all the negative thoughts come in. Yeah. I don't care who you are. I promise you, I don't care who you are. You could be the most positive, optimistic, confident goalkeeper. But when you are left to your own devices in that game and there's a lull, that's when everything comes in. All the self-talk, the self-doubt. Don't make a mistake. What if that happens? Could he lob me from there? He's 75. He could lob me from there, you know. And honestly, you are constantly talking to yourself like this. Especially when you get to the last minutes of games and stuff like that. If it's 0-0 or 1-0, you're slightly winning, or you're hanging on. You are, honestly, you start to really say, don't be a corner. Oh my God, the ball's gone out for a corner. Oh my God. And then you're looking at the player who's about to take it. If it's an in-swinger, you're thinking, oh no, don't in-swing this on me. Keep this as far away from me as possible. And then he might be an out-swinger. You're thinking, oh, thank God, I might not have to come and deal with this because it's an outswinger. Yeah. They're the kind of things that go through your mind as a goalie. Yeah. I promise you, it's a mad place to be.
Well, and they say goalies aren't mad. Right, Charlie Waterworth has asked, will Ben put on the gloves one more time and join Robbo for a game at Claverdam?
Oh. He's the manager at Claverdam. Charlie. He's desperate to get that question out. I've tried my hardest, Charlie, but he's not having none of it.
Oh, I'm not having any of it, Charlie. Absolutely no chance, mate. Absolutely.
He's the manager.
Oh, absolutely no chance. I've got this, I'll be honest with you, I've got this cyst on the side of my knee, right? And it absolutely kills, right? I need to have another operation on it to like take it out, but it's massive like lump. And it like if I do too long on the bike or I go for a run and it's too long or something, it swells and it's so sore, mate, honestly. So like, no, I am not doing that. I am never ever going to be playing another game of football.
Let's just go and watch Robbo at Claverdam.
I want to go and watch him and give him some
we have to have a Fozcast day out.
You can say
we?
Give him some abuse, but you still know that he'd be the best player on the pitch. You know that he will be running like an absolute dog and smashing people and getting behind, so there's no point. So I just go and admire it, really. Even as
well, if we get to the final, lads, we're at the best got.
Oh, we'll come,
so there's a great day out.
We'll come and watch that.
Walsall Stadium.
Yeah, we'll come and watch.
Go.
Right, S Pierce 18. Explain Dawson moving across the Black Country playing for rivals.
Oh, explain it. It's fairly simple, really. Okay, so Craig Dawson played for a few teams, left West Brom, went to Watford. He then signed for West Ham, South London. You know,
South West London.
It's miles away either way, basically. West Ham's training ground is a nightmare to get to, and Dorsey's from the north. Dorsey's from sort of Manchester area. That's where his family is based. He's got kids and that's where his family is settled. So for someone like Craig Dawson, the dream sort of ticket really would be somewhere that's about an hour away from
Staffordshire,
home.
Staffordshire,
yeah, yeah. You know, Manchester, anywhere, even somewhere a little bit north on that. But then you start looking at the teams that are in the Premier League, and there's not really anything north of sort of Liverpool until you get to like Newcastle, really, is there? So for someone like Craig Dawson, a Wolves, a West Brom, somebody around that area in the Premier League is the dream ticket. It's an hour in the car in the morning. It's in and out straight away. It's absolutely perfect.
They're big rivals, right? But it's a bit different in the fact that Dawes played for West Brom. Then there was a number of years in between.
Yeah.
Played for Watford, played for West Ham, and then he's gone to Wolves. So I think when they're in different divisions, when there's a number of years between playing for the other team, it softens it.
You can't begrudge him. You could never begrudge a player for going and signing for a rival team of somebody that he might have played for before. I think it's a very, very short career for footballers nowadays. And I'd say unless you've been like a player that's come up through the youth team, you support that team, they're in your blood, do you know what I mean? If you've come through Manchester United all the way through and then go and sign for a Man City, that's something you're going to have to consider because that has a knock-on effect for your life as well. Do you know what I mean? You know that you can't
but if
go...
you're released, but that's fine, Ben, and that's we're talking probably megastar status here. Yeah. But if you're a player that's been, I don't know, released by an Everton or something like that, and then you kind of go, well, my option is...
It's
probably not the greatest example in the world, but sometimes players aren't going to not take a move because of who it is, are they?
No. It's Wolves have signed him. They signed him on, a 3.5-year deal or something like that. It's for somebody of Dawson's age, it's the dream move. It's a dream move for him, honestly. It's stability, it's settled, it's an hour away from home. Ticks all boxes, doesn't it?
I bet West Brom wish they'd never sold Steve Ball to Wolves.
Bully.
Right, Ben, who is the best centre-half you've had in front of you? Not Man United and England, though, from Liam Monkhouse 11.
That's really, really good question. It's Gareth McCauley. G-Mac at West Brom. Wow, what a player. He was a bit of a late bloomer as a centre-back, G-Mac was. He didn't really sort of start playing first-team football till sort of his mid-20s, really. And then actually when I signed for West Brom under Roy Hodgson, Gareth McCauley had signed in the summer as well, just before me, and he was ill. He was really ill. Like, he had some sort of like bug, some sort of sickness bug, but it carried on for months, Robbo. I'm talking like 3 or 4 months. He lost so much weight. He was skinny, skin and bone almost, and it really sort of knocked him. He couldn't train, he couldn't play, so I didn't see him for the first 2 or 3 or 4 months, whatever, but I had Chris Brunt saying, no, he's a proper player, mate, honestly, wait till he's back, he's a proper player. Anyway, got his fitness back, got into the first team, and then for a space of about 3 or 4 years, 5 years maybe, wow, what a player.
Him and Jonas together.
Him and Jonas, honestly.
Good partnership, weren't they?
Unbelievable partnership, mate. He would score your goals in one box. He would defend it with his life like his life depended on it in the other box. He was fast. He was aerial. He was technical. Honestly, mate, he had absolutely everything. I know if there's West Brom fans listening to this, they would be backing this up as well, I promise you. And there's loads of players that I played with as well would say the same thing in that era. G-Mac was just, he was
looked to get him on, Ben.
Yeah, he's. I think he does the under-21s Northern Irish.
Does he?
He's like their manager now. Or 18s or whatever it is anyway. But GMAT, we'd love to have you on, mate. But proper player. Great bloke as well.
Right, Rob Jones, 1875. Will Robbo be returning to Birmingham City under Big Tony as a coach?
Oh, I'd love to. Go on, Big Tony, listening. If the opportunity's there, I'd love to work for Tony again. I had a great time playing under him at West Brom, and he changed the game and he changed us as a team, the way that we played the football that we did, and we scored the goals that we did, and that was all down to his philosophy, the way he brought us together as a group, and like you say, as a team, we just on another level compared to other teams. So the opportunity to go and work for him as well, under like being a coach, I'd love that. Just love to pick his brains, his philosophy, and learn off him. Yeah, it'd be great for me.
Is someone like Tony Mowbray, for you, like the dream job, basically? Because you know him, you know how he works, how he operates, and you know that he's a good guy and he's a really good manager as well. Is he for you, somebody that if he picked up the phone today, you'd go, yeah, I'd do that within a heartbeat?
Yeah, if Tony phoned me straight away, I'd go, yeah, I'm coming, Tony, yeah, not a problem. That simple, yeah.
I'll leave the podcast right now.
I think you have a lot of respect for a lot of people in football, and Tony's one of their managers that I had a lot of respect for as a player, especially with the way that he handled me with my situations when I was at West Brom, with like the failed medicals and the failed moves. So for me, he was a great man to have around, and he understood it because he played the game. So he knew how to sort of just say, look, Robbo, just take your time. You know, I know you're coming back to West Brom, but just go and have a little extra break just to make sure your head's...
Oh, that's nice, isn't
and
it?
And that's the type of guy that he was. So for me to like to, again, to possibly try and work with him, if Birmingham did call and he called, then yeah, it'd be a no-brainer.
What were the failed medicals, by the way?
So I got no ACL in my right knee.
Really?
Yeah, but no one never knew.
You'd never had the operation?
Never had the operation, no. So I must have played without realising that my legs were strong
enough. For how long?
For my whole career.
Maybe your whole career, really?
So I never know. You can be born without them as well.
800 odd games?
Just under 800 games,
absolutely
yeah.
Bonkers. I didn't even know this, Robbo. Yeah. I didn't
so,
even
yeah,
know.
Sunderland. So I had a medical at Sunderland, and I've told this story last week when I was with Nigel Kwasi, and it happens in football, and this is what players have got to understand, is this mental side of it as well that fans don't see of what players go through. So West Brom had agreed a fee with Sunderland. I went up there to talk to them. I had all my scans, had everything, and I'd booked Caroline's 30th. We was away in Rome.
Yeah.
So done everything at Sunderland with what I needed to do. Jumped on the plane to Rome just for the weekend. Was back on Monday. Was just going to go out there and spend some quality time with Caroline.
You're thinking it's all boxed off at
all
this point?
All boxed off. If any problems, then I'm going to come back Monday. So I'm on the flight, land in Rome, voicemail from my agent. Robbo, call me when you get this message, please.
So did you know? Did you worry?
I didn't worry. I was just like, what's this all about? Yeah. I have no idea what this is about. So I got to the hotel in reception, and I've phoned him, and he's gone, you got to fly back to Sunderland. I went, Rob, I'm in Rome. He went, got to fly back. They want you back ASAP. Oh. I was like, what are you talking about? He went, there's something come up on your medical that they need to, they booked you in to see a specialist tomorrow. I was like, Rob, I'm in Rome. It's like Caroline's 30th birthday treat.
Oh, gosh.
So I come off the phone. I'm
looking
at Caroline
the other way.
Straight away. I can see tears coming down her face. She went, don't tell me. We've got to fly back. She went, yeah. There's something come up on the medical.
Got it.
So we've had to fly back into Sunderland. We didn't arrive into Sunderland until midnight that night.
So you're travelling for a day and a half.
So
travelling
for a day and a half.
Happy 30th in Sunderland.
Happy 30th in Sunderland. So I went to see the specialist on the Saturday. Rugby, he was involved in rugby, the specialist guy. Tested all my knee. He was in there. He was like, yeah, it's all solid, fine, absolutely no problems.
Testing
so
it,
when,
pushing
when
and
did you have the operation?
That, yeah.
I went, what are you talking about? He went, when did you have the operation on your knee? I went, well, I've never had an operation on my knee. He went, well, so you've never been out for 9 months, 12 months, or you? No, why? He went, oh, well, I'll bring the physio in. So the physio told me there that I got, basically, they thought I'd had an ACL injury and I'd had an operation, but I had no scar. I said, well, have you not looked at my football record? I've never missed a game. And the only games I've missed is because I've been booked or sent off.
Yeah.
That's my record.
Yeah.
And they wasn't having it. Oh, so I ended up failing my medical at Sunderland because of that, because they couldn't understand that I hadn't had an operation.
This is...
But what it is what people don't see as well is they're now trying to haggle a price with West Brom.
Yeah.
Because they've agreed a fee.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're now making an excuse saying that I've got a potential problem that I've never had. And I've never understood it or realised it. So just before everything had been sort of disagreed with, right, I'm not signing, the physio turned around to me and said, your knee's going to explode in 2 years.
Oh, cheers, mate. Brilliant.
And I was like, you what? So now as a player, I'm thinking there's actually something wrong with me.
Wow. Wow.
So I obviously, we've gone away, gone back to West Brom. Like, this is a situation. They've failed me on medical, saying that I've got a bad knee injury and it's going to explode in 2 years. And they were like, no, it's not. Don't worry about it, Robbo. Like, just don't worry about it. So then a week later, I get a phone call from Wigan. Price agreed again with West Brom. So I go to Wigan, have the medical. They know about my knee. Yeah. So they've been told the history about my knee with what's happened at Sunderland. They're all fine, perfect, like that. Found my medical on my back.
Oh,
so
what?
They say I've got a bad back. I've never missed any games through my back injury or my knee injury. Again, it's just the way the football world works. And in the end, I just pulled the deal. I was like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying at West Brom.
I'll just settle in.
I said,
and play,
like,
yeah.
I'm just not. So then that was when Tony obviously had found out with what had happened. And he just said, look, Rob, I take an extra week and I'll see you in pre-season the week later than everyone else.
See, you hear that bit there that Rob said about the clubs at that point. So Sunderland go back to West Brom and go, well, we found this massive problem with his knee. So he's not worth what we were originally willing to pay for him. So we will try and haggle down on the price. That is very common, for one.
Yeah.
And then what also happens on that is a knock-on effect is where they then come to the player and go, well, you've got this problem with your knee. We think that you're going to get injuries in the near future. So the contract that we offered you and that you agreed for your weekly wage, we are not going to pay you that anymore. We're going to pay you less and we'll incentivize it on the playing side now. Yeah. That happens an awful lot as well, doesn't it? And it is. It's very much sort of, you start panicking at this point and just think, I just want to get the deal done. I just want to get the deal done. Yep. But it happens all the time, doesn't it?
But for a player's point of view, you've now, you know there's nothing wrong with you, but you've now been told there's something wrong with you.
So it's in your head.
So it's in your head. So I had all these tests. I went down to London. I had all these knee tests. And funny enough, my right leg was stronger than my left leg.
Unbelievable.
So for me, it was never a problem.
And you've never missed a game as well at that point either.
No.
Unbelievable.
There you go. Right. We've got a deep one here. Gone by 14. Corner shop suite. What's your pick?
Oh, strawberry bonbons.
Strawberry bonbons.
Strawberry bonbons.
Or rhubarb and custard.
Okay. Oh, yeah, they're good.
Yeah.
Rhubarb custards are good. Yeah.
And a little quarter of jelly beans. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And they used to have them behind the counter and they'd weigh them, wouldn't they? Yeah. In a little bag.
Do you remember the shrimps? Yeah. Remember the little pink shrimps?
Yeah.
They used to be a penny, they did, I remember, back in the day.
All of them were.
Yeah.
Penny mix.
The slightly bigger, what were they called? Fruit salad and like blackjacks. They were like 2p, weren't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, rhubarb and custard for me.
They are good, yeah.
Lovely.
Right, okay.
The dusty bonbons, the really dusty bonbons.
Yeah, dusty bonbons. Okay. There's our boy Scotty Powell. How do players' boots and goalie gloves deals work with brands? How strict are the rules?
Pretty strict. Yeah, pretty strict. Most of the time, unless you're a real exceptional player, then you will get to wear kind of what colour of boots you want to wear. But for the majority of players, when the new colourway comes out, you get sent three pairs. So if the colourway has to be worn on the Saturday, you'll get sent them the beginning of that week on the Monday, Tuesday, whatever. You'll get sent three pairs, probably two sets of molds and a studs, or two studs and a mold, whatever. And then you will have to wear that new colourway on the Saturday. You have to. It's in your contract, because that new colourway of boot is being launched. You have to show it, exhibit it on the pitch on a Saturday afternoon. It's as simple as that.
So when you were with... You always wore Sal's goalie gloves during your career, and you had a boot deal with Nike.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So two separate things. With Nike, for example, could you wear, like, when you're out and about off pitch, could you wear Adidas trainers?
No. It depends what level of athlete you are. If you're somebody that's going to get pictured an awful lot, if you're, Marcus Rashford, if you're sponsored by Nike, the only sportswear brand you can wear is Nike. You can't be seen in an Adidas or Reebok or anything. You can wear other brands, like he's got a sponsorship deal with Louis Vuitton, I think, hasn't he? So he could wear them shoes, or he could, but the actual sportswear brand is Nike, and you have to stick by that. Don't get me wrong, if you're like a player of my sort of stature, you could get away with wearing whatever trainers you wanted, really, because you know that even if you did get pictured in it, Nike wouldn't really even say anything about it, because it's not going to make too many ripples or anything like that. Yeah. Who were you sponsored by the way?
I had a few. So remember the old Copas?
Yes.
Growing up, Adidas. YTS was Copas, free Copas.
So World Cup
I loved
Copas.
Them. World Cup was class growing up as a kid.
Yeah.
But then I went to the Puma Kings because of the leather.
Yeah.
Oh, so I love the leather.
Old school. Like
old school. And they were never, no one was ever beating them back in the day.
Were. They were lovely, weren't they?
But then not
Umbro Specialis.
Umbro Specialis.
Oh, the leather on the Umbro Specialis. Michael Owen
Puma
back
Kings
in the day.
Were iconic, Kings, though, weren't
Puma Kings were iconic at the time. But then I finished with Adidas just because I love the boot itself.
Okay.
Yeah, but like you're talking, it would depend on the player as well, wasn't it?
Yeah,
with the boot.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll send you all the colours, but it's the leather, it's the right fit.
That's it,
So as long as you're sending me the colours, I want the same boot.
Yeah, that's it.
But it's got to be that boot
player,
all the time.
Players are very sort of superstitious with, you will pick a model of boot and you are wearing that model of boot. So if you wear a Puma King, there's no, like Adidas now will do like a striker version, or Adidas and Nike will do like a striker version. They'll do like a midfielder version, and then they'll do like a all-rounder kind of thing, which is basically for defenders and goalies and stuff like that. Like just kick it as far as you can. But if you wear that sort of boot, you don't wear the other type of it or anything like that. Do you know what I mean? You pick a boot based on what you like, and that's it. You stick to that. So yeah, but you name some of the boots there. Like, do youth team players or young players still get that sort of PFA thing where you get two sets of like a set of boot or two sets
I think
of boots
they do.
At the start
so
of the season?
What's this then? Tell us what this is.
They get
Robert.
A PFA card. So they get a PFA card where they can, well, now as well, they can spend their money on what boot they want or what they want to. But if you've got, a lot of young lads now have boot deals.
Yeah.
So they'll get sent their boots.
So what is the PFA card?
So it's a PFA card. It's like a £350 gift voucher that they send out to all the young players or senior players as well, I think, get it now.
Yeah, they get it now as well.
It's just to go and spend stuff on what they want on the website. So it's like Pro Direct.
So you can get what you want. But back in the day, you never used to get a card or anything like that. You'd basically get a pair of World Cup, Adidas World Cup studs, and you'd get a pair of Adidas Copa Mundial molds is what you'd get, basically.
Could you wear the same set of boots all season?
Yes, easily. Yeah. The my favourite ever boots were Nike CTR 360s. They were just... they were beautiful. Absolute beautiful. I think it was like kangaroo leather, kangalite leather or something.
Nice.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Right, I've got a question from Desdemonian. I'll ask this one to you, Robbo, because you mentioned last time about Vancouver, was it? You were close to signing him?
Toronto, sorry. Yeah.
Ever fancied a move outside of the country? So how did the Toronto thing come about? How old were you and how close was it?
I was 30, so I just left Bolton. So my contract ran out at Bolton and I didn't have a club. And Danny Dicchio was working in the academy out there, who I played with at West Brom. And Paul Mariner at the time was the manager of Toronto. So he just sort of phoned me up and he just said, look, what are you thinking? We'd like to have you out here for 5 days just to come out and just have a look at the facilities and train with the team and also just show you around the city. So I took my two eldest, so Luke and Jamie, come out with me and Caroline, and they sorted us all out and they looked after us amazingly. So yeah, we flew out to Toronto and it was unreal. It was brilliant and I loved every minute of it. But the downside to it is that you're over the other side of the world, and family-wise for me, logistics... Caroline was just about to start her own business in acupuncture as well, and it just didn't feel right for me. So, yeah, but the opportunity was close, but it just wasn't... Me as a player, I just didn't feel it was right for me and the family. That was the way I looked at it. But, yeah, the opportunity was there to go out and sign for Toronto, yeah.
It's a massive upheaval, isn't it? It's a massive upheaval.
It's like any job. Take football out of it. If you're living in a certain area and you've got kids and you've got a family network around you, it could be grandparents, brothers, sisters, cousins... It's really important, right?
Yeah, well, moving to the Midlands from being down south anyway, from Watford, was a big upheaval for us anyway, to sort of leave your family behind, knowing that you've now not got that support system around you. But then the thought of travelling all the way over to Toronto and not basically seeing anybody would be a big move for us.
Yeah, a bit too much.
But it had to be right. These moves had to be right for you and your family.
I think that's, speaking to you over the years, Ben, that's probably one... not a regret, but some little niggle that maybe wish you did. But is it fair to say that it just didn't quite fall into place?
Yeah, that's, I mean, again, it's all of that family side of it. It's the football side of it. It's timings as well. Everything has to fall into place at the right time. You don't get many. That's why there's not many players that actually end up playing abroad.
Especially
really.
In America, because the seasons are quite awkward, aren't they?
Yeah.
Contractually.
Exactly, yeah. They overlap each other. But also, everybody knows that England really is the place to be, isn't it, to play football. And it's always been a case, especially in my career, that there's always been another contract on offer in England, which is kind of, you know what I mean, it just makes everything easier, really. So the opportunity kind of arose a few times towards the very end of my career, but again, to do it, same as you, Robbo, the upheaval of it all was probably just a little bit too much than what the opportunity was.
No, fair enough. Okay, I've got one here from Nick's Fells. The one person you most want on the podcast, Ben?
Cool, that's a really good question.
That's a good one.
That's a really, really good question.
Can I throw mine in there?
Yeah, go on.
Got started to get into a lot of American sport recently, more so, and we've been watching loads of documentaries, haven't we? And the two brothers in the NFL, Jason and Travis Kelce, they played each other in the Super Bowl final last year, and they've got the biggest sports podcast in the world, right? Called New Heights. It's unbelievable podcast. Really cool guys.
Yeah, very cool guys.
Those two would be the dream for me.
Maybe a Lance Armstrong. I'd like a Lance Armstrong.
Oh, yeah. God.
I'd like a Lance
Cycling. I was thinking of golf. You like your golf. Maybe like someone like an Ian Poulter.
Oh, someone like that.
Or Tommy Fleetwood.
Really good, yeah.
I'd like to see Tommy Fleetwood because he's got lovely hair.
Yeah, Tommy has got lovely hair. You can tell he's just a nice, clean human, kind of.
Nice guy. Lovely guy.
Yeah, he looks clean. I'd like to get Lance on. So there's a Lance Armstrong documentary that's out on Disney Plus. It's been out, what, a couple years now?
Yeah.
Couple, three years. But it's basically a very open, honest account of what's happened with Lance Armstrong himself. So he bears everything. He tells the truth. And, well, he tells the majority of the truth, I presume, from watching it. But there's so many questions I had left unanswered about the way he went about his business, and I want to know a bit more how much the remorse of it all and how much it affected him mentally and how he dealt with it and he overcame all that, because at one point he was the most hated man in the world, genuinely, like in within sport especially anyway. Yeah. At one point when it all came clear and he did that Oprah interview where he said, yes, I have been taking performance enhancing drugs, that there was like, woof, there's no coming back here. There's no coming back for Lance Armstrong. So yeah, I think something like that would be phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you kind of on that.
He's a fascinating human being.
Isn't he?
Oh, he's a fascinating human being.
He really is. Okay, what clubs, let's take like derbies aside, what clubs did you hate playing against?
Oh,
maybe you just knew it was going to be a tough day at the office, but maybe not someone that you'd expect. Man City, Ben, for example, you know that you're
going to get pumped.
You're going to be busy. But is there anyone else like a Tottenham or a, I don't know, like that you just thought they're well organised or they're tough?
Tottenham in their pomp, not in their pomp, sorry. Tottenham were at White Hart Lane, at old White Hart Lane.
We'd read that there.
It was Harry Kane, you had Dele Alli, you had them sort of boys. That moment in time with Gareth Bale as well, they were...
Poch.
I remember going to White Hart Lane and thinking, this is just relentless. This is relentless. I think it was 5 or something like that, but it was relentless. And the crowd were all on top of you and giving it and everything. There's a few places like that. The old West Ham, Everton's a real horrible, tough place to go as well.
So I'm going to throw a few old school out there.
Come on.
I'm going to go Stoke.
Oh, yeah, Stoke.
Stoke and places like Millwall on like the cold...
Cold Tuesday nights.
Yeah, but you know what's coming.
Yeah.
But again, you're still not expecting it. So they're the ones where you've got to be mentally up and ready for these games, because you know for 90 minutes they are going to bombard you with long balls. They're going to stick their elbows in. They're going to like, it's going to make it horrible. And you're going to go there and you're just thinking when you go there, you go, right, I know what's coming, but I know what's coming.
You would quite enjoy that.
I'd love it. Yeah,
you
I know.
Would quite
I love
enjoy
it.
That.
I love it, but it's the fact of you know what's coming.
Yeah. You would worry for your teammates more than yourself.
Yeah,
you?
I'd be worried for my teammates because you'd look at one of your teammates and you'll go, oh, he's not quite up for this.
Yeah, he's a bit soft not underbelly. Sure
but you know about... the ones, don't you? You know the ones, and you know if you've got an half clever manager as well, the manager knows the ones. And so if you are playing against a Stoke City on a Tuesday night, I remember Stoke City, when they were in the Premier League, if they were on telly in the midweek match, at night and they were at home, they would win. I knew for a fact they would win because when it was on telly especially, they had to show everybody exactly what they were all about, and they would make a point of giving it 110%, and you knew that Stoke City would win. But managers know that as well, so they would look at that game and go, maybe he's not the right person for that. Maybe he's not also, but people like Robbo would be first name on the list.
Is there any particular attacker, Robbo, that you used to think, he's going to give me as bloody good as he gets today?
Well, you just knew every time he played against Peter Crouch, he's like, he's
really
a lot taller than me.
Yeah.
And he'll peel out to my side because he knows he can win a lot of headers. But I'd give him as good as what I got. And that's what I loved about it, is that I knew that, okay, because Pulis's teams were renowned for it, was the long throw from Rory Delap, and we'll stick the ball up to Peter Crouch and it's going to be horrible football. And that's what you just had to prepare yourself for. You had to be ready for that.
Do you think he was underrated as a player, Peter Crouch?
If he found the team that suited him, that Tony Pulis team, that Stoke City
team. They played to his strengths, didn't they?
Oh my God, it would play to Peter Crouch's. It would be to Rory Delap's strength and to Peter Crouch's. And it wasn't necessarily waiting for Peter Crouch to knock it in the back of the net. It was second balls after that.
Yeah.
So as soon as he got that first contact, all bets are off, isn't it? Yeah. All bets are off. It is just the ball's dropping in that 6, 8, 10, 12 yard area and it is absolute carnage. It's a free-for-all. And that's how Stoke City would win games. They would mentally do you by saying, we're going to just keep doing this relentlessly, wouldn't they?
All the time. It was consistent when all the time it was, just lump it in there. Yeah. Just get it in there and let's see how they deal with it.
Yeah. Second balls. You would second train balls. On a Friday, Thursday for dealing with the second balls. You knew that Peter Crouch would get a flick on, so then it would be zonal positions.
But Kenwyn Jones as well.
Kenwyn
Jones, who played up front for him as well, he was the same, but he was just so good at what he did. Like, he could jump in the air and you think he was going to flick it on and he just chest it.
Yeah.
But then even later, they had
his strength.
John Walters was a handful.
Yeah, John Walters always played on the shoulders, but then you
boys.
Think you'd have time to clear it and he'd be leaving one on you going like that, go and have some of that. And you'd be like, oh my God, we're like,
and how tough? We spoke about this last time. Did you play with Kevin Davies at Bolton?
Yes. Yeah, I played with Kev,
He would have been a difficult bloke to play against, wouldn't he?
Davo was the nightmare to play with. Yeah, but he was someone that you loved on your team because you knew that he would throw it about and he would stick up for you when you needed it.
I connected with him on LinkedIn the other day, funnily enough. I think he's...
he's an agent now.
An agent, isn't he?
Yeah, Kev is,
I'd love to get him on.
Kevin Davies,
get him on.
He'd be a really
good guest. He's a great guy
guest.
As well, Kev. Davo's top man.
He got an England call-up, didn't he? He got an England cap.
Yes, he got one, yeah.
He did. Again, he's the sort of lad that... Yeah, he did, because I was in the England squad with him, actually.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, I was in the England squad with him. And that's how I know he's a good guy. And he is exactly what you just said there. He is the kind of guy you want on your team because you know he's going to do it properly. He's professional. And on a Saturday, he'll give you everything he's got.
Fantastic. Right, we'll have one more. Where do you rate Manuel Neuer in the greatest of all-time keepers list? From Karthik Vati. Sorry if I've butchered that pronunciation.
Yeah, again, another sort of evolution of what a goalkeeper is and what's expected of a goalkeeper. So back in the day, Peter Schmeichel is big, loud, brash. It was stop the ball going in the back of the net. And then it kind of evolved a bit more then into a Manuel Neuer, who was a front-footed sweeper keeper, brave as a lion, fantastic reflexes, keep the ball from going out the back of the net, but would play on the halfway line sometimes. It was just like nobody's ever seen anything like it. It was game-changing, literally game-changing. And that, off the back of that, is where you've got this real kind of sweeper keeper now, a goalie that will play from the back, and it all comes through that goalkeeper. The likes of Liverpool and Man City do it particularly well. But he was the first real evolution of that sweeper keeper goalkeeper. And in his pomp, he was the best in the world at that moment in time. But in the all-time list, he's got to be up there. He will be in the top five. Easily.
Okay, good stuff. We've got a couple of just very quick fire ones to finish. Do you think Wrexham will get promoted this season? Harry, GV11. Yes, they will. Ben?
Yes, I think they will.
Robbo?
Yeah, got a good chance.
Yeah, yep. Momentum.
Okay, and then the final one is, what's your go-to takeaway order?
Oh, chicken tikka masala, Indian. Yeah.
I'll go for a vindaloo. Yeah, give me an Indian. I'll go for an Indian. Yeah. Keema naan.
I'll go Keema somewhere naan. Down the middle. We'll go for a jalfrezi.
A jalfrezi. There you go, everybody. That was part two of the, what's it called? Get your questions
Q&A.
In on Instagram. Yeah, it was good, isn't it? Q&A. We like doing these,
we like to shed
a little bit of light on the goings on in football behind the scenes anyway. So I hope you enjoyed the show and we will see you all very, very soon. Robbo, top man, absolutely world-class insight.
Yes.
Tom? Well done, mate. See you soon. Foscast.
Up the Foscast.
Up the Foscast.
Did you just say Foscast?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's new. I like it. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the Foscast. Don't forget to give us a follow on Spotify. Up the Foscast.